Veterans Affairs called to order on Tuesday, January 30th. First bill up is House Bill 2158. Is there anybody who needs to testify on that bill today? Open the public hearing and ask that question. Hearing none, we'll move to a work session. Mr. Keller, can you tell us briefly about the bill?
Yes, sir. We heard this bill on January 23rd, and it modifies the role of the Advisory Committee to the Director of Veterans Affairs.
Okay, thank you. With the work session, do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2158 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Schaffer moves House Bill 2158 with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? If not, you call the roll, please.
Aye.
Vice Chair Schaffler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Scott?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. The motion carries. I would entertain a motion to place House Bill 2158 on the consent calendar.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Work session on House Bill 2158 is closed. I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2160. Is anybody would like to testify on that? I'll close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2160. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2160 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Schaffer moves House Bill 2160 with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. So ordered. Could we have if there's no discussion, we have a vote, please.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Schaffler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Scott?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. The motion carries. I will entertain a motion to place House Bill 2160 on the consent calendar.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Next bill up is House Bill 2161. Open a public hearing. Would anybody like to testify? Seeing no one. Close the public hearing and open a work session. Mr. Keller, could you tell us about House Bill 2161, please?
House Bill 2161 was last heard by this committee on January 23rd. It expands the rulemaking authority of the Department of Veterans Affairs, expands the role of the Advisory Committee to the Director of the Veterans Affairs, and adds spouses and survivors of deceased veterans to persons the Director of Veterans Affairs may assist.
Thank you. I'll accept a motion to move House Bill 2161 to the floor with a due pass.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2161 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Schaffer moves House Bill 2161 with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion of the committee? Hearing none, will the assistant call the roll, please?
Representative Collins?
Aye.
Vice Chair Schaffer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Scott?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. The motion carries. And I will entertain a motion on House Bill 2161 from the consent.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. The work session, House Bill 2161, is closed. The next item on the agenda is a public hearing and a possible work session on House Joint Resolution 7. I'll open a public hearing on HJR 7. Brigadier General Caldwell. And Representative Krupp, did you want to testify, please? Former representative, I'm sorry. Old habits die hard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and former representative is a lot like being a former Marine. You're never an ex.
That's true.
Thanks for the I'll try to be brief, and you know how difficult that is for me to do. You know, the opportunity to say as a state thank you to the sacrifice of our men and women and their families in the Oregon National Guard should not be taken lightly. The little things that we do to recognize their sacrifice means something to them. And that's something I learned about when I was on the ground with the Guard in 2004 in Iraq. In talking with soldiers about things that were important to them that made them feel appreciated by the people of Oregon. And In that experience, I brought home several suggestions, some of which we as Republicans, Democrats, and the governors came together last session, and we put many of those suggestions that were given to me into law. There are now benefits for the Oregon National Guard. This concept is something that we tried to get done last session, where we recognize them by declaring a particular day in this state to honor the Oregon National Guard and the sacrifice that it is for their families. I just came home from Afghanistan, where I spent 9 days with the Guard, and I'm wearing a lapel pin that is an American flag and an Afghan flag. There are many things that our guardsmen do that you never hear about that profoundly impact America in how it is touching these nations. Let me give you this example. The Afghan army is very young. It's 3 years old. Has no real military battle history like we do. It's a nation that really doesn't have a national identity, in all honesty. It's made up of several different ethnic groups. One of the things that we're doing is integrating our Oregon National Guard trainers with Afghan Army units. And what happened is that they have no tradition of many things. And one of them is, what do they do when they bury a soldier who's been killed in combat? Well, our CBs build pine boxes for them. They put them in a pine box and put them in the ground. That's it. They have no ceremony and nothing. Well, one of our Oregon National Guardsmen, Lieutenant Timothy Merritt, who's General Pritt's aide, found out about this. He's found out that soldiers, Oregon soldiers, were taking money out of their own pocket to buy Afghan flags to put a flag on a coffin when an Afghan soldier was to be buried. So he wrote an email to his mother, and his mother sent that email all across America to her little circle of friends, and people started sending money to him to buy flags. He's negotiated now with an Afghan flag maker in Kabul to build Afghan flags for $8 a piece. And what's happening now is the Afghan army has accepted that and has now established a new tradition. When soldiers are killed in combat, they now have a ceremony and they put an Afghan flag on their coffin. It's one of those little things that you never hear about, and it's a positive impact that Oregon National Guardsmen have had in helping a nation build an identity with the symbol of a flag, much like we respect ours. That's what the Guard brings to the table when they go on a deployment, whether it's at Hurricane Katrina or in Iraq or in Afghanistan. They bring I guess a cultural mindset of people who are citizens, who are just out there trying to help citizens. So now we got guardsmen and other people that are donating money for Afghan flags to help the Afghan people get to a new place that maybe they've never been before. I heard many other stories, and I'm not going to go on about them, but I will tell you that our Oregon National Guard soldiers are respected by many of the Afghans that they work with, and I talked to interpreters, I talked to many Afghan soldiers who had been in combat with our Oregon National Guard trainers. And I have to tell you, there's a powerful bond there, because our trainers live with these guys, they eat their food, they understand their culture and their customs, and again, that's one of the unique things that the Guard brings to the table, is they bring it from a citizen's perspective. And it translates into a bond that creates, well, an Afghan army that's becoming very effective at being a professional army. So this is a small way, again, to say thank you to the Oregon National Guard for all that they do and for their families. It's hard, you know, I was over there just before Christmas. It's hard to be away from your family during Christmas, during Thanksgiving. But our soldiers do it. Every one of them are volunteers over there. And they're glad to be there, and they think they're making a difference. And I've just told you a story about one way in which they are. And I think it's appropriate that we take a day out of Oregon's activities and just say, you know what, let's recognize the sacrifice of the men and women of the Guard and their families. And that's why, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have you pass this resolution forward. Thank you.
Any questions? And I want to thank you for going over, bring those stories back. It puts a real personal face on it. Thank you. General?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. ACR 7 was, as Representative Krupp indicated, was brought before the 2005 legislative session, but was never passed due to the flurry of events that surround the final days of every session. The resolution codifies in Oregon December 13th as the birthday of the National Guard, which we celebrate every year. The National Guard was known originally as the militia and was formed in 1636 when the General Court of the Massachusetts Bay Colonies ordered existing militia companies from the surrounding towns of Boston to form into three regiments, North, South, and East. Before this time, there were militia companies, but they were not formed in a regimental formation. Using this date as the beginning of the Guard, we recently celebrated the 370th year, which predates the formation of the Army, the Navy, and the Marine Corps by 139 years, last December in a ceremony at the Anderson Readiness Center here in Salem. The militia concept was ratified by the Founding Fathers in our nation's Constitution and is also in the Oregon Constitution. Many changes have occurred since our beginning in 1636, but the essence of the citizen soldier leaving their homes to defend fellow citizens is our primary precept. In Oregon, we trace our roots back to 1843, 16 years before statehood. Here in Salem, in May of 1843, a committee of 12 recommended that the formation of territorial government and the formation of a military force. Four constables were appointed, a major and three captains, and they instructed them to form companies of mounted riflemen. These four constituted the nucleus of Oregon's first militia. A few weeks later, on July 5th, 1843, the territorial government was formed, and from hence came the Oregon National Guard. I have some additional notes that I've added on our Oregon history and talking about the first order of business that the Oregon militia really did was the Whitman Massacre in 1847. It may interest you, but in the essence of time, I will conclude by saying that I concur with Representative Krupp's comments, and I think this is a good thing to do for the Oregon National Guard and State of Oregon. Happy to answer your questions.
Representative Schaffner.
Thank you. You know, there's a broad spectrum of opinion on certain policies of our federal government, and our foreign policies and where men and women are stationed. But, you know, I've never spoken to anyone who spoke disrespectful of our armed services. At least I've never talked to anybody like that. I'm confident there's a few out there, but there's a few things around here we can agree on, and that is recognizing men and women out there in harm's way right now. And whether we agree with the policy or not, they are in full belief that they're defending America, and God bless every one of them. So I agree with this absolutely and completely, and I am honored to be here to support it. So thanks again, folks, for bringing it here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do you want to just review what the resolution is for us?
The measure designates December 13th of every year as Honor Our National Guard Day.
Okay, thank you. And one of my nephews who is going to school across the street has served in Afghanistan with the Guard as well. Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll close the public hearing on House Joint Resolution 7 and open a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Resolution 7 to the floor.
To be adopted
recommendation.
Representative Schaffler moves HJR 7 with a be adopted recommendation. Any discussion? If not, assistant call the roll, please.
Representative Collins?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Schaffler? Aye, please.
Vice
Chair
Scott?
Aye. Chair Barker? Motion carries, and I'll carry that bill on the floor. Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is House Bill 2400. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2400, and Representative McDonald and Representative Dahlem.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's get a rocket chair here. Thank you.
Please start, whoever wants to lead off.
Thank you, Chair Parker. I'm Representative Dollum, House District 59, and we're very proud to say that we're the home of the Oregon Veterans Home in the Dalles, Oregon. I'd like to ask Paula Brown if she'd come up and join me, because I would like to have somebody here that's certifiably smart. I'd like to give you a little rundown on the home. I have a brochure in front of you on the Oregon Veterans Home. I have visited the home with Jim Willis. I've visited with Senator Farioli, with Representative Donna Nelson. I visit with almost anybody that will go out there with me. The home is a great source of pride to us. It's a relatively new building. It has an excellent staff. And it serves a function that I don't think we serve anywhere in Oregon. The home itself is licensed for 151 veterans. We actually have 147 spaces, and we have 134 vets. Now, the 134 vets, you can't get into the home unless you need some level of care. It's not a retirement home. You must need some sort of care. To give you some notion of the primary care that we provide, is the Alzheimer's unit is full and has a waiting list. But to be admitted, the medical director must agree and must accept the patient. And the reason for that is we must determine the needs of the patient and then measure that against the ability of the physician and his expertise. So to come to our Oregon Veterans Home, you have to be in medical need. Now, we must have an MD on staff by law. Now, I have known in the 6 or 7 years that I have been visiting the home, I have known spaces where we had at three different times no physician on site. I have known three different doctors. I will say that each one of the physicians out there are wonderful people. I don't know why they don't stay. I know that one returned to Canada because that was his home and that's where he wanted to go. Dr. Pruzo, that's out there now, I'm told he'll stay. I've never asked him if he would, but we're going to assume that he will. He's an excellent provider. He's out there at least one day a week and sometimes more, and he's been there now since a year ago, October. But in our part of the state, it is very hard to hold a physician. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, the cadre of physicians that are being graduated have very, very few general practitioners or internal medicine people in the pool. For example, OHSU just graduated 16 physicians. Only one of them is going to be available as a general practitioner or as an internal medicine. Now, in order for us to attract those people, we have some things we have to work with. Our compensation for physicians is not equivalent to what it is in the Valley or to what it is in Portland. So we start behind the eight ball. We also have call coverage that is much thinner. So if you're a practicing physician, at least in House District 59, I can say specifically for the Dalles, and in most of my district, we don't have physicians at all. But even in the Dalles, the call coverage is very thin. So if you're a practicing physician in my community, you're on call longer, you're on call more days, and seldom, and I made several calls before this afternoon's committee meeting, to several physician friends, seldom do they have a weekend where they're not on call. But with the compensation and the call coverage so thin, and not many specialists in the area. For example, right now we don't have a cardiologist in the Dalles. So when you set up practice in the Dalles, you don't have not only the associates, but you don't have the cadre of specialists behind you that is full. Now, we have some excellent oncologists. We have excellent specialists, and we're very fond of all of them. But we do have a high turnover rate. And for that reason, now, when you add the population that we're serving at the veterans' homes, or at the veterans' home, and the need generated by the veterans' home, it is hard to find and hard to hold a physician in our facility. As for the state of Oregon, on the outside of our building, it is the Oregon Veterans Home, and we're very proud of that. The state was involved in building, but the ongoing and any expenses we have are borne by Washoe County. And what we're going to ask you for is we don't want you to participate. We just want you to give us some tools so that we can fully staff our facility and offer those veterans in our facility the full services of medical coverage that any of us would want to enjoy. In conclusion, I'd like to thank you, Representative Chair Barker, for giving me an opportunity to speak. And if you have any questions, I'll see if maybe Paula can't answer them. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I do have a question. I was hoping to get a chance to talk to you before this meeting. Where you came up with the 60% number, that seems pretty high for a physician.
Well, what we looked at was if we had full medical service, and I wrestled with this figure myself, but what we looked at is if we had full physician service, we would have to supplement that service with some work downtown. And ideally, we could use a two-thirds person in the home, and the rest would be private practice in one of our local clinics or at the hospital. So, and it's not scientific, Representative Barker. It's best guess.
Okay, thank you. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. My question was, do they, and thank you, Representative, for this, do they practice outside of this? Apparently they do. And will this tax credit get them anywhere near what we would pay a physician in another on another site? I don't know how the pay scale is here.
I didn't pursue that direction, Representative Schaffler. I did call the Mid-Columbia Medical Center, our hospital, and talked to the recruiter there, who's a fairly good friend. And what Randy told me is they have a whole bag of incentives that they use to try and bring people to the Dalles. Now, the federal law precludes you from paying a person or giving a person additional perks, free housing, that sort of thing. But they do help them with all they get. We didn't talk about a direct answer to your question. We looked at the percentage of work that they would perform in the veterans home. We would give them an incentive to do that work.
Thank you.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions just to kind of get a feel for the impact, kind of the number of physicians that you think might in any given year qualify for this tax credit. Secondly, is this in a location that the physicians practicing in the area qualify for the rural physician tax credit that's already on the books, which is also $5,000, so this is the equivalent. I'm just sort of trying to get a feel for the fiscal.
Your first question, and how many physicians would this impact? We think we have right now. Our physician is spending for sure 1.2 FTE at the hospital. We think that we could load him to 0.32 FTE. So we're talking about two-thirds of an FTE. Not multiple, but two-thirds of a doctor. Okay. They would have to supplement. There's not enough work at the vet's home to require one full FTE. They would have to be part of a practice if they were going to be full-time. Now, we have on occasion had a retired physician. That's the fellow I told you that went back to Canada. We have had another physician that worked part-time at the vet's home and part-time downtown. So it would be one FTE. Now, this... when I started this, I was going to look for a little broader scope, but then this summer we had the expose on the incentive program, and I believe the incentive program was to bring physicians to rural Oregon, or at least parts of Oregon that were unserved. I'm not sure that this person would qualify for both of those. This is a qualification if you work at the veterans home, in my mind. I'm not sure that they would qualify for that one, but I'm not an expert on that other incentive program.
My name is Matt McDonald. I represent the United Veterans of Oregon. To me, with a physician shortage in this particular area, this is just another incentive to get veterans at the veterans home, which we dearly need, because these people, for the most part, are up in age. And as you know, as you get older, you have more health problems. So at a small cost to the state of Oregon, we're able to provide a service that is really needed for the veterans at the veterans home, and we do support it.
Okay, thank you. Paula, do you have any? Okay.
I'd be happy to answer any questions. For the record, my name is Paula Brown, the Deputy Director at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and if anybody has any questions about the veterans home, I'd be happy to answer those.
Any questions? Thank you very much. What I think I'm going to do on this is I'll close the public hearing, and this is a bill that we would like to move. I'm going to have Mr. Keller do a little more checking on that and see if the 60% figure is the right one. And whatever else, we'll fill that out. We'll bring this bill back. We'll just try to get it really up to snuff. So in case 60% might be too much time in there is what I'm thinking. So
thank you, Mr. Chairman. And any help that I can give, I would be tickled to lend to Administrator Keller.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we will not go to work session today on that. Next bill is House Bill 2208. Open a public hearing on 2208. Bill Connolly and Ms. McDonald.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Val Conley, Administrator of Veterans Services Division for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 2208. The purpose of this legislation is to include a part-time attendance provision of Oregon veterans' educational aid to qualifying Oregon veterans. As some veterans attending school are also juggling working, raising children, and otherwise attending to their lives and family with their educational pursuits, allowing veterans attending school part-time to receive an Oregon educational benefit will afford them with exacting the kind of assistance they need with their educational endeavors. House Bill 2208 amends ORS 408.010, 0.020 and 0.060, enhancing the current benefit of $150 per month for full-time attendance with the addition of a part-time provision paid at a lower rate of $100 per month. Currently, veterans attending full-time may receive $150 per month, provided they are not utilizing a federal educational benefit concurrently. These same requirements would apply to the part-time educational aid benefit. Additionally, the total number of monthly benefits paid would not exceed the total number of months served in the Armed Forces of the United States, or 36 months, whichever is less. During the 2005 legislative session, important legislation was passed to increase the amount of state educational aid for Oregon veterans attending full-time from $50 per month to $150 per month. However, no provision was made for part-time attendance. Veterans who were attending part-time and receiving the allowable $35 per month based on their part-time attendance no longer qualified for this benefit. If passed, House Bill 2208 will help Oregon veterans pursue their educational endeavors regardless of whether they are able to attend full or part-time. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill today.
Thank you.
My name is Matt McDonald, representing United Veterans of Oregon. the amount of money we're talking about per month is not very much, and young veterans, most of them today, unlike World War II veterans, are married. And this little amount will make a great difference in their ability to get an education in the state of Oregon. These part-time students, some of them work one semester, go to school the next semester because they can't afford full-time schooling. What this will enable them to do is to have a better life and get more education from the state of Oregon for a very small expense to the state of Oregon. These are the students that are really trying to get an education. They don't have someone paying their tuition. They have to work for it. And this, I just think that this is something we should do. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Representative Shostak?
Yeah, thank you. I agree it is something we should do, and I support it. I don't, the GI benefits today aren't anything like they were, if I'm not wrong, out of World War II. And I would encourage our federal government to start putting more money into that. I absolutely support this. My question, though, is it says may have fiscal impact. I believe it will. If we're providing, and I know the numbers will probably begin to go up due to so many folks coming. I imagine it would increase because we have a lot of activity in the military.
Number of veterans in the state.
And then, so my question is, do we know how much we're spending now at $100 a month, and then I could maybe do some math and project it out to see what it'll do, just out of curiosity.
Chair Barker, Representative Shoffler, because this benefit cannot be used at the same time that they use their federal GI Bill benefit, of course, right now we have no part-timers. We do have approximately 20 to 25 full-time students at $150 per month.
All right.
So it's not a lot.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You know, I can remember when it was a much smaller benefit back in the mid-60s, and then once the federal GI Bill kicked in, people weren't drawing that. But in those days, I think I was getting like $55 a month from the federal GI Bill before I got married, and it went up to like 150 or something. But it was, although that was a lot more money in those days compared to today, of course, and tuition is much higher today.
Absolutely.
Any further questions? I'll close the public hearing. Thank you very much for your testimony. And I'll open a work session on House Bill 2208.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2208 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Does it have a referral?
No, sure does not.
All right.
Representative Shoffler moves House Bill 2208 with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Would the assistant call the roll, please?
Representative Cohen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Shoffler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Scott?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. I think on this motion, I'll ask Representative Scott if you'll carry this on the floor, please.
Sure.
Thank you. Is there any further business to come before the committee today? Hearing none, the meeting is adjourned.